In the studio, I got Stephanie Philp. Welcome back to the studio, Stephanie.
Thank you, Aaron. Morning, everybody.
And you've come in saying you want to talk about time.
Yeah, I think it's about time we talked about time.
And that immediately got us into talking about sci-fi and movies with time travel in them, which I find endlessly fascinating. It sounds like you do a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people find the concept of time interesting. You know, like time is a concept. We've only actually got right now. We haven't got the past or the future. We've only got right now. And do you know that it wasn't until the 13th century that somebody invented the hourglass? You know, so before that, people didn't bother measuring time.
So I guess they knew where the sun was in the sky.
That's right. But it was more, it probably wasn't as precise as we got now, because now we've got like seconds and minutes and hours, and we've got nanoseconds, and we've got, you know, like races are measured in thousandths of a second.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have that in the 13th century. We just had this, I don't know, an hourglass. We turned it on, that's an hour. I don't know how they measured an hour even, because how would you know how much sand to put in if you didn't have a clock or something?
I guess they'd do experiments. They'd go from sunrise to sunrise, flipping the thing over.
Yeah.
I'm making this up in my head right now, but I was thinking, you make the hourglass. I think that's enough sand for an hour, and you try it. And if you get 24 from sunrise to sunrise, then you got it right. But if you didn't, you need to go back and take some sand out, put some more sand in. This is, you know, I imagine that's what they did.
And even then the length of the days change each day.
I know that just to add to the confusion, but I can't figure out what else you'd do.
No, it's not. It's not a.
Is it this sort of thing?
Intellectual test, anyway.
This is the sort of thing the monks were always doing, wasn't it? They were.
There was, yeah, they did.
Yeah, they had the time
and
to sun do a
dials
bit of
things
research,
like that, didn't they?
Yeah,
they used the sun, and you know the thing is, in parts of Africa, Papua New Guinea, and parts of the Pacific as well, the concept of time as we know it doesn't exist. So we even code time in language. You know, so we say, "I went somewhere." Well, implies it's in the past, or I'm going somewhere, implies the future, or I'm here, it's present tense. Whereas in some, like I know there's, I'm not sure which island or islands in the Cook Islands, they only have present tense. So they can't even talk about the past. And then we have conditional tenses as well. So we have, you know, so language is coded in time. You know, if we talk about the Second World War or something, you know, we're looking at 70 years ago, I think it's about 70 years ago now. So even events are coded in time, you know. So we, in, I don't know, the Western world, for want of a better word, we are time dependent, if you like. So we can't, you know, if we're going to turn up for a meeting, we need to know what time it is. If we turn up 2 hours after, the meeting's not going to be happening anymore. So we've got watches to tell time, we've got phones to tell time. Like I said this morning, I left mine at home by mistake, and then I didn't got a clue what time it was. So
you were now all carefully connected to the exact time. Like, you can't say your watch is slow anymore.
No, that's right. That my body's slow. So I was rushing on my walk to make sure, and then I got here like 10 minutes early.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, which is actually not too bad, really, for a human being to guess the time and estimate it themselves.
So the other thing is that because we all have a way of coding time in our mind.
Yeah.
So if we didn't have this, we wouldn't know whether it was today or yesterday or whether it's next week. So that's another way of coding time.
Does it matter?
So when you wake up tomorrow, how do you know it's today and not yesterday?
So I guess our civilization is very dependent on having not control over time.
No, we haven't got control. We've only got
control
over ourselves.
Yeah,
and a kind of a group understanding of time, so that, you know, so if you've got a meeting like today at 9 o'clock, that you know what 9 o'clock, everybody knows what 9 o'clock is, and everybody goes there at that time to have the meeting. Because if everybody just turned up when they felt like it, then, you know, the meeting could last all day or not exist at all. So
we live, I'm talking about this again in the second interview this morning, I'm talking about time I spent living in the islands, in a place called Tokelau, these little atolls, very, very isolated. When I was between 12 and 14, and there'd be a community events, and we'd always get frustrated because it was always later than the time they said.
Yeah.
But then the one time we thought, oh, well, we'll just turn up late because they're always late, they were much closer to the time they'd said. They're sort of looking at us, going, "Come on!" But they live in a village, so there's kind of like a, I wouldn't call it a collective mindset, something like that. Though people are all getting ready for the event,
yeah,
and they kind of all see each other getting ready, and they get ready kind of together collectively,
yeah.
Like they're not all isolated in houses that you can't, you know, the houses are just a roof in because it's always summertime,
yeah,
a lot of the time. So Polynesian cultures are well known for having a different sense of time than we do.
Yeah,
and very frustrating for the Palangis who've been sent to the islands to make things work properly, make civilization operate, function correctly, you know.
Well, there was a few people from NLP that studied time and how we kind of code time in our mind, and they found that some of it comes from Hawaiian Huna as well. They found that people have generally so. Two ways of coding time. So one is when they think of the past, it's in front of them and to the left. And the future is in front of them and to the right. So almost like reading a book. And now is in just straight in front of them.
Mm.
So that's one way. That's called through time. And it's kind of like the timeline is outside the person. So it's like past to the left, present in front and future to the right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other one is past behind.
Yeah.
Future can be, pardon me, either in the person's body or just in front of the body, and future is in front. But, you know, people can have all kinds of timelines. It can be in a V, it can be in a spiral. I've had all kinds. And basically, however people code time at the moment is fine for them. Those are two general ones. Now, the one where they have the past behind them and the future in front. When you say to people, where's now? Sometimes they'll actually touch the body.
Yeah.
And that is a genuine, it's called in time, where all time's happening now. And that's what you would have got in Taukalau.
Yeah.
So people are just working on now. When they gesture in front of the body, it's often kind of an adaptation of both timelines where their natural instinct is probably to just do whatever they please whenever they like, but because they've been trained to be on time for certain things, then they've got this kind of mixture of the two, which is just outside, just in front of the body is now. And so it's quite interesting that what I've found in working with lots of peoples and couples is the difference between these two timelines can cause like major issues in how they behave with each other.
Yeah.
And problems in the relationship because if they don't understand the differences, so that they're judging the other person based on how their timeline is. So the other thing is if anybody is listening has heard of the Myers-Briggs type indicator, it's a way of typing people. The different timelines corresponds with what they call judger and perceiver. And they're just names. The judger isn't meaning that they judge people. It's just a name.
Yeah.
And the perceiver. So the perceiver is the one that's like people in Taukalau, that's all time is now, and they just sort of go along with whatever's happening.
Yeah.
And the judger is the timeline that goes in front, where they, if you've got an appointment with a judger at 3 o'clock and you arrive at 3:02, you're late.
Yeah.
They'll be walking up and down going, where are they? Right. It's 3:02. They should have been here at 3 o'clock, right? And so whereas the other... This is why doctors, dentists ring you up the day before to remind you of your appointment because people forget. You know, I've had clients that you ring them in the morning and say, we've got an appointment this afternoon, and then they forgot by the afternoon.
Mm.
So... And neither one of them is right or wrong. They're just different, and some of them are different in different situations. So some people can change. Like when I first learned about it, mine was the judger one, so it was all in front. You know, I trained myself over years to be on time. My mother's like that, so she...
I know where this is going.
She's English. My dad's Jamaican. He was the opposite.
Yes, yeah. I knew you were going to say that. Then that's everything we expect about a West Indian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so Mum spent the whole of her life basically training my dad, you know, to be on time and everything. Yeah. So I'll tell you some of the differences between the two because once you understand them, it gives you more understanding. So first of all, for me as a coach, if somebody's late, so if unless they've got lost or something, then it tells me already that they've probably got the timeline going through the body, you know.
Yeah.
So the two different timelines is the one that goes in front is called European timeline as well. And I said that it was traditional in Europe, you know, that, as you said before, people just got up when the sun came up, worked in the fields, went to bed when the sun went down, etc. But then with the advent of the Industrial Revolution, that wasn't much use if people, because that could change from day to day when the sun came up. And in England, sometimes it never comes up, you know,
yeah.
it just stays in all day. So that was then became like a process where people would have to arrive at the factory at, say, 7 o'clock, and their job would be to, you know, maybe take iron ore, put it into a furnace, melt it down, put it into moulds, turn the moulds out, you know, file it. And so it became like a process. I'm gesturing with my hands in front of me, everybody.
Thank you.
That from one point to another. So, and then they'd finish at the end of the day with some products and they'd go home and then they'd repeat the thing the next day.
Yeah.
So they say that's where they think it came from. And so before, time was coded inside a person, and then after the Industrial Revolution, people started to see time as being outside of them, in front of them.
Yeah.
And so so that's that one. The other one is called Arabic time. So this is where, this is traditionally in hot countries. So the timeline goes behind for the past, and future is out in the front. And so time is always something that's happening now. For those people. So for the Anglo-European one, it stretches from left to right, or all right to left, but generally left to right, because that's how we read. That's how we read.
Yep.
And so the person can kind of get a concept of the timeline without turning the head. So
can you observe this in people when you're talking to them?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And so, and also they might gesture, they might go, oh, you know, that's all in the past, and they're just gesturing kind of with the left hand to the left. Whereas somebody who has a timeline behind, they go, oh, yeah, that's in the past, and they might gesture behind them.
Yeah.
Or they might say, yeah, well, in the future, and move the right hand to the right for the
Anglo-European. Yeah, I can see that. I do that, the Anglo-European one. Yeah.
And then whereas somebody else might say, oh, yeah, you know, when I think about the future, and they'll gesture straight ahead of them. So
don't worry, Kyan, I'll put it up. I'll put it somewhere better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just leave it there. We've got Kyan promoting a gig at Rocket Kitchen New Year's Eve. Oh, that's early promotion. All right. Thanks, man. So back to time.
Yeah. The time for the person who has a timeline back and front, a portion of the timeline is often inside the body or behind the plane of the eyes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the timeline might also dissect the body. So the people who have this...
I've got to stop you. How do we know this? How do that's sort of purely conceptual, and you're also talking about people whose timelines are in a spiral.
Yeah,
How do you even work that out?
I have had people with timelines in a spiral. Well, I ask them, okay, so I'll ask people. So maybe because I've explained it a bit now, I probably should have done it at the start, but anyway, the way that you can find out how people code time is just ask them to maybe close their eyes. If there's a group, I ask them to close their eyes so they're not influenced by what the other people around are doing.
Yeah.
And then I just say to them, okay, so if I asked you to think about your past and the direction of your past, you might point backwards or forwards or left or right or some other direction in relation to your body. And it's not your conscious concept I'm interested in, but your unconscious. So if I were to ask you unconscious, where's your past, where would you point, right? And sometimes people will go, oh, you know, I have no clue.
And Stephanie's so just done the hand movement showing back.
So they'll gesture with the hand behind them, or they'll go, oh, I don't know, and they'll just gesture with a hand movement to the left.
Yeah.
And I'll go, okay, and where's the future? And they go, oh, I don't know either. And they'll gesture to the right, or they'll point in front.
So
their unconscious mind is giving me the answer.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they'll tell you, oh, I'll get it behind me or I'll get it in front of me.
So it's funny, you just did one then. You used your thumb to point to your right or somewhere, and I was moving. Okay, never mind. The angle was funny. Back to you. You're the expert.
So that's how you tell. And then sometimes people go, oh, it's kind of a spiral, but it's rare. Usually it's a straight line, or sometimes it's a V. The main thing is then is the people who have the European timeline, the length of the timeline is the length of their outstretched arms. So they put their arms out. The past is at the end of the fingertips on the left, and the right will be on the fingertips on,
okay,
the,
all
on
right.
the right. Whereas the other timeline, the Arabic warm climate one,
yeah,
that goes however far back and however far into the future.
Right, out of eyeshot.
Yeah, yeah. And so the other thing then is when it comes to decision making, the people who have the European timeline in front of them, they often find it more difficult to make decisions because the past is just kind of there. They can go, oh, I did that before and it didn't work out, and so, well, I'll do something different this time. Whereas the people who have the timeline behind them, because it's behind them, they might make the same mistake more than once because the access to the memory is behind them. If this makes sense.
Wow.
So that's what I say. It's not just about time. It can actually cause a lot of issues in relationships when people have different timelines if they don't understand it.
I talked before about living in the islands, and there was, like, my father was like a lot of Palangi people who were appointed to do jobs, which really were, they were about maintaining civilization, right? That's really what it was about. His was in the education system, but there were people there from, there were diplomats and people from the UN, and they'd all get together after work and talk about how frustrating it was working with the Samoan culture. And I think, and a lot of it, no one had this understanding.
No.
It was just, it was different, and both sides thought the other side were a bit crazy.
Yeah.
And but this is the sort of thing that would have been behind
going
that.
On, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Especially the time one was, yeah, a huge source of frustration to people who are Westerners who are busy and trained to get things done by certain times.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And they seemed a bit obsessive to the Samoan people from the Samoan culture.
And I think the other thing that can be frustrating is, and it's frustrating for both. It's, you know, if you've got the Anglo-European timeline, it's frustrating working with people with the other timeline, and vice versa. If you've got an Arabic warm climate timeline, it's frustrating with these people who are obsessed with time. You know, like, oh, it's 2 minutes late. For God's sake, get over it. You know?
Yeah.
So there's frustration on both sides, and as I said before, neither of them are right or wrong, but they do have different benefits, if you like. So somebody who's got the European timeline, they are very good at organising things and planning ahead, okay, whereas the other timeline is not generally. Their future might only go 3 weeks in some cases. So they might set artificially early deadlines and try and achieve those and get stressed because they're trying to achieve something. But they're also very good at working in the moment. So I used to work with a friend. We had a dog training company at one point. And she could work with bombs going off around her. Not that we ever worked in a bomb site, but it didn't really matter. It didn't matter what was happening. She could work and get stuff done. Whereas for the other person, like me, and more so at that point, I like everything to be tidy, and then I can work. I can't work in a mess.
Yeah.
You know, it's a reflection of what, if I've got a mess around me, it's a reflection of what's happening in my mind. Whereas for her and other people with the Arabic timeline, they just focus inside. All time is now. It makes no difference. So that's a really useful skill to have.
So you say you've changed.
Yeah, mine's kind of half and half now, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah, right. Was that a conscious choice?
I think I'm not sure it was. I think because I was very strong, the judge of the European one. I mean, I was brought up in England. Obviously, I take more after my mum than my dad. Because mom trained dad out of this.
Yeah.
But I think it's just understanding the differences and then thinking, well, I can change that. You know, I don't have to be like that. We can change how we think about time. Sometimes because of necessity, because we might be working with a whole lot of people that have a different timeline, like you were talking about in the islands, you know, like if you were the only person that thought that way, probably over a period, you'd either get so frustrated or you'd start to change to the way they thought about time as well.
Yeah. Well, that see, that whole thing about like European consultants working in the third world, like I kind of semi-sarcastically say about maintaining Western or maintaining civilization, but it's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's like bringing the Western values and systems and incorporating those cultures and countries into the system.
Mm.
And no one's very conscious of that. I presume it's because at the base of it is wanting the whole world in the economy, right?
Right.
And so that it could be, then it could be exploited.
Those systems have existed for hundreds of thousands of years without any interference from anybody.
And the irony is you're saying that the Western, the Anglo-European one is better for planning ahead, but what we seem to have planned ahead to do is to exploit the earth till it's in a very destabilized state, whereas the people who weren't planning anything looked after it mostly just looked after it fine.
So I think now we're starting to appreciate that more than perhaps people did in the past as well, you know.
Yeah, I also feel it's being obsessed with time too much is not very healthy, and living in the moment's really important, psychologically healthy.
Exactly.
And that might be, like I asked you before, why did your sense of time change? But you probably weren't going, oh, I need to change my sense of time.
No.
You're far more likely to be saying, oh, I need to live in the moment a bit more because it's healthier.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that when we, you know, so people, again, who have this European timeline, they're often not in the now. They're always thinking about what they should have done yesterday or what they need to do tomorrow.
Yes.
Or next week or in an hour's time.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas for the other people, all time's now, so they're always in the moment. So having, you know, maybe a combination of the two in different circumstances can be useful. You know, so turning up on time when it's a really important meeting rather than half an hour late or forgetting about it altogether. But then when you're in the meeting, actually being present with the people that are there and working on what we need to work on at that time rather than thinking about what happens after the meeting.
Can you switch it? Is it easy to switch?
You can do it, but it's quite disconcerting for people. Sometimes I do it when I'm training for over lunch, and they go out with a different timeline over lunch and see what happens. But I'd rather not do it on the radio.
Well, I mean, some of it is like the one about we've got to be on time. You can end up in a really rushed state.
Yeah, yeah.
A rushed emotional state. Yeah. And we all know about that.
Mm.
And that's actually, you take quite a while to talk yourself down from that.
And that's another reason how I'd find out, you know, where people were on the timeline. So either they'd arrive late because they have got mixed up with where they've got to go and it's the first time they've been and all that kind of stuff. And then you can tell because they're really stressed because they're late.
Yeah.
So you can almost say, well, they've probably got that judge timeline, the
European
one.
Yeah,
And other people will be like 10 minutes late and they don't even know. So that tells me that they're perceiver, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing then is other differences between the two types of timelines is that people who have that European timeline, they often judge value for money around time as well.
Yes.
So let's give you an example. Let's say I've got a client at 10 o'clock and finish at 11:30, say, so an hour and a half. And at 11:15, I've done some things and I think that's all I need to do for this person at the moment because it's no point in doing any more. And I say, well, let's finish for today and I'll see you again next week. They'll often sit there for another 15 minutes and talk because they equate value with time, value for money with time.
Yeah.
So they'll sit there and talk for another 15 minutes to use up the extra 15 minutes.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Even though nothing might be achieved.
Even though nothing's achieved, which is fine. I mean, that's just their timeline. Whereas the other person, we might finish in 50 minutes. And I go, right, you know, how do you feel? Do you want to do some more? And they go, no, I'm fine now, you know. And they never, the time doesn't even enter the head.
Yeah.
So it, because all time is now. the other interesting thing is that the people with the European timeline, this is again just to remind everybody, the one that's in front, they often have diaries and planners, which I do because I like to know where I'm at and I like to journal as well in my diary.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that they say that the diaries were invented by the European timeline people for the other people to use.
Right. Here, have this.
Have a diary, you know.
Well, I used to be, when I was younger, I used to be able to remember everything I had to do.
Yeah.
I can't now because I'm older, but also, like, I'm booking interviews all the time.
Yeah.
My diary is just mostly full of interview stuff.
Yeah. I have a written one. I like to write stuff, you know, that happens during the day and all that kind of stuff, so I'll keep it for that. But the other thing, the interesting thing, you know, is that they like diaries and they often expect other people to be the same, and they take deadlines really seriously.
Yeah.
You know, whereas for other people, sometimes they just kind of whiz by in a fun way.
So in a fun way.
They generally don't plan and like to take like life as it comes. And planning might only be 2 to 3 weeks in the future. So they're likely to be more spontaneous as well. So the European timeline, again, has difficulty being here now because they're always thinking about what they should have done or what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow or, you know, in an hour's time. Whereas for the other people, it's easy for them to be here now because all time is now.
So if you're a person who's feeling stressed a lot and you're conscious that you've got to do something about it because you're spending all your time worrying about the future and obsessing about the past, then you kind of need to understand that this all comes together. It's a whole job lot. Like, if you can stop doing that, you're probably going to end up also not being on time so much.
Well, as I said, you can have a combination of the two.
You have a combination, but you have to be conscious of that.
Yeah.
Because that desire, that feeling of stress about I'm going to be late, I mustn't be late, I don't want to let people down.
Mm.
If you're still holding on to that, it's going to be really hard to live in the moment and do the thing you want to do, live in the moment more often and to be healthier.
That's true. The other thing about that, though, is that people who have the European timeline, even if they haven't got a watch on, they'll still be able to tell you what time it is within about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, well, what time is it now? And they'll go, oh, I think it's about blah, blah, blah. And they'll be pretty accurate within about 5 minutes, even though they haven't got a watch on. The other people, you know, they're going to be way out unless they've just looked at the phone or something.
Yeah.
So the other thing then is that we just going back to that anxiety a bit then. So to do anxiety, you have to be focused on the future and what could or couldn't happen in the future. So the structure of anxiety is to think about the worst thing that can happen.
Yes.
And then focus all your attention on that. And that'll create anxiety in your body. You could easily just use the same structure but focus on the best thing that could happen in the future.
Oh, right.
And focus on that. It's the same process. It's just a different thought.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other structure, because anxiety, see, emotions are related to time as well. So we can have regret, but we can't have regret for something that hasn't happened yet. It's in the past. Fear is a current emotion. Anxiety is an emotion of the future. You can't be anxious about something that's already happened.
Yeah.
You can only worry about it. Worry is a, I don't know, is that anxiety light or something?
Anxiety applied to the future.
So worry, anxiety applied to the future.
That's importing your anxiety. That's importing your fear, your future fear into the present.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. And then focusing all your attention on it, so you create more in your body and more worry, and then you're more likely to attract that because that's what you're focusing on.
And when we talk about it like this, it seems like a crazy thing to do, but we pretty much all do it.
Woo Crew t-shirt on today.
What's that? A Woo Crew. What does that mean? Steffi's pointed at a shirt that says Woo Crew, but I don't know what that means.
Well, sometimes we go into the land of woo a bit, don't we?
Oh, yeah. We haven't really today, not like other days.
No, that's true. So the other thing then is that, I mean, the reason for this is quite interesting. So I should ask the listeners a question. So just to show you how we think about different emotions. So if you can think about something that you regret, So you could do this, Aaron, just something small that you've done in, you know, in the last couple of weeks that you regret. Maybe you've said something to somebody, or you didn't say something to somebody, or you,
yeah.
you did something. Just something small. And have you got one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do so, I have to say it? I don't want to say it.
No, don't. You don't have to say it. That's good. So what I want you to do is, in your mind, can you go back before that event?
Yeah.
Yeah, and where's the regret now?
It doesn't exist.
Well, it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, it's a nonsensical question in a lot of ways.
Right. So it's interesting, isn't it, though? So because it's all happening in your mind. So it doesn't exist because, well, it's still happened, but because you've gone back before it, then it doesn't exist anymore. So they kind of thought, well, this is interesting. I wonder what else is like this. And so what they found is that we code memories in our timeline as well. So for people with... the European timeline, again, that's the one that goes in front, the memories are usually dissociated. So that means that you see yourself in the memory.
Yeah.
So let's
like
say...
like a third person.
Yeah. Like if you were watching, if you were looking at a photograph of yourself with a group of other people, that would be a dissociated memory. Whereas for the other people, the people with the Arab timeline, back to front or front to back, then the memories are usually associated, so they re-experience them as if they're happening now.
Oh, okay.
So that can cause upset. If you re-experience everything as if it was happening again,
yeah,
then you're kind of reinforcing it by re-experiencing it. So, and then the size of the images are for generally, again, for the European timeline, about the size of a CD case, about 14 centimetres.
Really?
Square, yeah.
How bizarre.
And then for the other people, back to front, front to back, about 20 centimetres square.
How do you know this?
Well, just studying people and people that have done a lot more work on time than even I have, you know?
Yeah.
And so then they'll say different words. So the European one will say, oh, time's on my side, because it's one side to the other.
Isn't that a song?
Well, probably. And then the in time people will say, oh, you'll look back on this and laugh. You know,
yeah.
You're only going to look back on it if it's behind you, you know? And then with the European timeline, past experiences serve as a reference for decisions now. And because the timeline's only as long as their arms outstretched, it's easy to go, oh, you know, I don't want to make that mistake again, and be a bit more risk averse than the in-time people. Whereas they might resist making a decision because they like to keep their options open. And bad decision experiences are behind them, so they're not as easily accessible. So often if you say to somebody who's got the in-time timeline, so that it goes from future in front and past behind, you know, do you want to come to a party on Saturday? And they'll go, oh, I'll let you know later. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to close their options off, because something different or better might come up in the meantime, right? Whereas... The other one, the European timeline, they'll say, oh, yeah, okay, what time is it and what do you want me to bring?
Right, yeah, let's get it organised.
Yeah, so they'll say, they want to know, that there's a thing in NLP, so, yeah, they want to know everything about what happens a week next Wednesday.
Right.
And the other people go, next Wednesday? What do you mean next Wednesday? I haven't even got to the end of this week yet, right? So you can start to hear the differences and how this could cause issues in relationships, right?
You know something else? I'm noticing, because I've got, well, one teenage kid left, is that...
What did you do with the others?
She turned 20.
Oh, okay. That's a relief.
Yeah, yeah. That's all that was. Yeah, nothing sinister, folks. But even the difference between the 20-year-old and the 17-year-old, the way that they... The social media they use is different. Like the 20-year-old uses Facebook for communicating, like in their sports teams, and the 17-year-old doesn't.
Yeah.
And like there's rapid changes happening, and then for the 17-year-old's age group, in fact, I think this is happening for other age groups too, because they've always got their phones with them. They're always online. They don't make decisions about anything because everyone, all their friends, are always accessible.
Right.
And so they'll always, a decision will be made at quite late in the piece about what party's happening or something, or what social gathering's happening.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's going to create changes in the in that generation about the way they perceive time, because everything is more immediate. You don't have to plan ahead because you've got access to everybody.
Yeah, it could be. I'm just wondering about the people that are organising the party, though, and they think, well, nobody's coming in, they cater for three and then 40 turn up.
Well, I guess, I don't know.
So if you, if you go to a party and there's no food left, then you start to change your attitude a bit.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it doesn't, I'm not saying it's a perfect system, but...
it's interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to be, and you have to have a device. I know people with kids who are a bit older, they who were kind of slow on getting their devices, and in the end they had to get a cell phone because they had to be at least via text in touch with their mates to, because plans were always changing.
Right.
Yeah, maybe it's Raglan too.
Yeah, you know? I think there's probably more of a vibe of the in time one.
Yeah.
You know, so the one traditionally hot countries here.
Yeah, it is a different culture here. Musicians, artists, very much known for, well, not known for their organisational skills. pretty famously. No offence, people, anyone listening out there.
Well, this is the thing, is that, as I said, neither of them are good or bad. They're just different, and it's really learning to understand the differences. So that, because otherwise you just take it for granted that people are behaving in this. Not take it for granted. You can get personally affronted by somebody who's behaving in a completely different way to what you might behave in.
But clearly the artistic pursuits require being in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so the other thing is we've probably all had experience where we're in that flow state and then all of a sudden it's like 5 hours has passed and you haven't had any lunch or breakfast or anything. It's like, where did the day go? Wow, that was amazing. I achieved so much to be able to get into that flow state.
Yeah.
So the other thing about this then is because, you know, NLP is interested in time as well, obviously, but then if we code our memories in time. So somebody who has the European timeline back to, you know, front, all in front, they might not have memories of specific occurrences in their life. You know, like if you said, oh, can you remember your 16th birthday party or something, or 16th birthday, they might not be able to remember a specific birthday. It's like all their memories of birthdays have collapsed into what's called a gestalt, and so they just have a general memory of birthdays.
Yeah.
If that makes sense,
they're categorised.
Right? Yeah. Whereas the other person will have very specific memories of individual incidents.
Okay.
And so then, again, given that something, the example I gave you of something that you regret when you go before it, it's not there anymore. When we go back and look at memories of the past, we can change the memories so that they're no longer affecting us, because often traumatic memories have occurred before the age of about 7. And when we haven't got the ability to be objective about things. And so if we can go back and look at those memories from above them, not from inside them, because if they're traumatic, we don't want to re-traumatise people.
Yeah.
But if say, the person's 30 now and something happened when they were 6, they usually haven't got a conscious concept of what it was. And so with discovering what those are quite specific. And again, we're trying to ask the unconscious mind what that incident was, because the person, if they knew consciously, they would have already fixed it, right? And so that often they'll say, oh, it was when I don't know. And then I'll go, what's the first thing that comes into your head? And they'll go, oh, 5, but that can't be true. And you go, well, okay, well, let's go with that. And so the memory that comes up is often not one that they had a conscious recollection of. Because, as I say, if it was conscious, they would have already revisited it and sorted it out. And so we don't want them going back into it. We have them float above it. And then if they're 30, they've got 30 years of experience, or 25 years of experience, that they can look down on this and see it for what it was. Because sometimes the incident might not have been traumatic. It might have been traumatic when they were 5. It might have been the first day at school, for example. That's quite a common one. But when they look at it as a 30-year-old, they go, God, it was, what was I so worried about? But now they're 30.
Yeah.
So they can go, okay, well, what were the positive things to take out of that so that you can let go of all that emotion and just keep all the things that you needed to learn from it, you know? And then when they come back along that timeline, they release all the other similar occurrences. Because what happens if we have something traumatic happen, we often make a decision about life as a result of that. And that creates a belief about that. And then because we've got that belief, we keep having the same kind of incidences on regular occasions throughout our life until we resolve it.
So same, keep slightly traumatic things keep happening around.
Yeah, there. Or it could be like, something happened when you were 5 or 6 and as a result of that, you adopted a belief that, you're not good enough for something.
Yeah.
So, which is a common one. And yeah. So throughout your life, you experience other instances which prove to you, because you've already got the belief, that you're not good enough.
Oh, so you're cataloguing, noticing and cataloguing those, but not the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you look at that first incident and realise that actually, you know, you just made a decision about something and you're only 5 and, you know, you can reevaluate it now, then it changes all the subsequent ones, and it's kind of like a string of pearls. When you take one off, all the others come off.
Right.
And then it changes the future. And so you can have a much brighter future then. So that's how I use timelines and time coding to help people to overcome traumas and just even negative memories or limiting beliefs. So if they've got a belief about something, that's probably come from something in the past where they've adopted a belief as a result of something that's happened.
Do you have to track down that event, or can you
just... Usually track down the belief first, find out what that belief is that they have, and often it's kind of, that takes a bit of doing sometimes, and then when we've got the belief, then we can track it back to the incident. And then clear that incident by reevaluating it. And so then the future timeline's clear of that, you know. And then there might be other things. It might be a negative emotion that they keep experiencing, like anger or frustration. And they go, I keep getting frustrated. And there doesn't seem, you know, in hindsight, there doesn't seem to be any reason for me to get frustrated. So that's probably come from something way back as well.
Right.
Yeah. It's really fascinating.
Like, well, what sort of thing could have happened? Like something when you're 5 again?
Well, I'll give you an example from when I was on doing my practitioner training, and because we practice all of this stuff as practitioners, so we were doing this, and I was asked the question, you know, if you knew when it was it before? Oh, this is interesting. So the questions: if you knew when it was it before, during, or after your birth? And you know, apparently when they started doing NLP, the questions was it before, was it during or after your birth? And people started saying before, and they were going, like, what do we do now? You know, people are saying before.
Unexpected.
So the question now is, was it before, during, or after your birth? So I said after. You know, that was my gut feel.
Yeah.
And they go, what age? And I just went, 5. And then in my head I'm going, 5? What the hell happened when I was 5? So anyway,
so you just got to let the inner voice, like,
yeah. I always say to people, just tell me whatever, even if it feels like a guess. And so with this thing, then, so they have a float above that event. So I didn't know what the hell it was, because I'd got no clue. I'd never done timeline before, and I got this image of me being about when I was 5, and my dad teaching me to read. So for the first year I was at school, I was hardly at school. I had really bad tonsillitis, and I was not at school very much at all until I had my tonsils whipped out when I was 5.
Yeah.
So this incident was my dad trying to teach me how to read. And I think I've mentioned this before. So we had a couple of books. One, I think, was Jack and Jill, which I'd memorised. But sometimes he'd turn 2 pages and I'd read what was on the page that was in the middle, and so I'd get a good idea and get sent to bed, you know.
Yeah.
Or the other one was, I think it might have been The Little Engine That Could, and it was, I still remember it, I'll be dire, blow the fire, puff, puff, puff. Well, I couldn't say I'll be dire, you know, there's no way. Who puts a name like that in a kid's book, right?
Yeah.
So then I'd get sent to bed again, you know. And that, so the emotion that I was feeling was like frustration. It was like being stuck between a rock and a hard place, you know. And so once I realised that, that, you know, my dad was doing the best he could to teach me to read, given that he wasn't a teacher, and so that I wouldn't be bottom of the class, you know. Yeah. So it was interesting. But then, you know, other times I've had people and I've asked them, you know, was it before, during, after your birth? And they've gone, and they've made like a but sound, but then gone, oh, after. And I go, well, it looked like you were going to say before. And they go, yeah, but that can't be right. And I go, well, let's just go with it.
Yeah.
So we go before. And then if they say before, it's like, was it in the womb or before that?
Okay.
So sometimes it's in the womb, sometimes it's before. And then it's like, okay, was it before? Was it passed down through the generations or was it a past life? So this is getting really into the woo now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been gobsmacked by, you know, what I've been, what people have come up with. Like the first time I ever did this, I was working in a, in the power company where I used to work. And, of course, I had 120 employees to practice on. And yeah, they'd all come to me if they had a problem. So one guy came to me and he said, got this problem, you know, he's having issues with his wife. And I said, what's the problem? He said, oh, jealousy. He said, he was really jealous. And I said, oh, okay. So jealousy is a form of fear. Yeah. You know, you're worried the person's going to run off with somebody else. So I go, okay, okay. Well, I've got this new technique, you know, that I can show you. He says, yeah, are you happy? And he goes, yeah, yeah. So I said, was it before, during, or after your birth? And he said, before. And I said, okay, was it past life or passed down? And he says, past life. And I said, how many past lives? And he says, 46. And I was like, wow, you know. And so I did the process, and it resolved. You know, it was amazing. Right. The next person I had that was also working with me, he said, I asked him, you know, where the past was and where the future was. And when I said, where's your future, he pointed behind him.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, they never talked to us about this on the course. and where's your future? Where's your past? And he pointed into the future, out in front
of him. Yeah.
And now he's right inside. Now, this guy was on, he was a senior engineer, but he was on a second warning for being late.
Oh, yes.
So he'd have to go out on site and meet customers who were, you know, they've got a subdivided bit of land and they needed to get power on. And so he'd be at his computer working on some model and he'd have two alarm clocks there or two timers. And the first one would go off and he'd just kind of put his hand on it and turn it off and carry on doing what he was doing.
Subconsciously turn it off.
Yeah, because he was engrossed in what he was doing. He was very much in time. And then the next one would go off and he'd bang that one down as well. And then he'd carry on and then, of course, he'd be late. So, and I said to him, well, maybe we need to turn the timeline around, but he didn't really want to. And we found out why. One reason was that he said that it had been quite useful for him. For example, every Friday he used to get fish and chips for the family. And one night they were opening up the fish and chips and the advert for the job that he got at the power company I was at was in the newspaper that the fish and chips were wrapped up in. So that was an example. So there was a few things we needed to change before he could change the timeline. And so that was any use to say, oh, things just creep up on me.
Well, have you got your back to the things?
Exactly. So it was like, so it's really fascinating. And then, you know, being able to change those things in really 20 minutes or so is amazing.
Right. Well, yeah. Speaking of time, we're out of time.
Oh, look at that, 10 o'clock.
Yes, yeah. We go over a little bit here. It's Raglan. So, but not really. I'm not obsessed, but I watch time closely while I'm doing my show.
Yeah.
But I'm not like that. No, I am like that. I'm just not quite so obsessive about it. Just everything has to happen on time during the show. You can't have dead air.
Yeah.
It's always a bit of a fear. Anyway, we've been talking to Stephanie Philp, Inside Your Minds, and this is about time. Can people follow it? Where can people find out more about the strange concept of how we visualise time, even though we're not aware we're visualising it?
Well, go to the website. Or how do
we conceptualise it?
I think there's an article on the website. It might be called About Time or something like that. It's insideyourmind.com.
Okay.
And they just put... just search for time and see what comes up. I'm probably due to write another article about time as well.
Oh, based on this chat we've just had.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Stephanie, thanks heaps for coming in.
Okay, thanks.
All right, folks, end of the show for the day. And yes, I'm finally back at work after 2 weeks of not being very well. And we'll be here again tomorrow morning. We'll catch up with the fallout. Not fallout's probably a strong word, but since the local body election. See you then.